Because we need light. Light enables us to see. And I think often when we think about light and darkness, we use it as a way of grouping people. I love Star Wars, and in Star Wars, you've got the light side, who are the goodies. They are the heroes of the peace. And then you have the dark side. And the dark side have all the coolest lightsabers. So when you're a kid, they're the ones who you want the toys of, and they're the ones who you want the action figures of. But then they keep doing awkward things that make it impossible to root for them, like blowing up planets. And I think because of things like that, we can often think of light and dark and use it in quite a binary way to group people into goodies who serve the light and baddies who serve the dark. But the thing is, ultimately, light is about whether you can see or not. And biblically, when we hear about living in the light or living in the darkness, it's ultimately talking about whether we can see Jesus or not. See, we are told in this passage that we need to live in the light. But without Jesus, none of us can do that. In John chapter 8, Jesus says that he is the light of the world. And because of that, anyone who follows him will not walk in darkness. Just think about that for a second. Jesus is the light of the world. And so if you follow him, you won't walk in darkness. But if he is the light, then if we're not following him, it is impossible for us to walk in the light. So as we look at these passages, I want us to just take a step back from this idea that there's dark people who are bad and there's light people who are good, and to just think there are people. And there are people who recognize Jesus and therefore see things differently, and there are people who don't. But Jesus tells us that his church, his followers, not only should we see him as the light of the world, but we ourselves should be a light to the world. In Matthew, he says he wants his people to be a lamp placed on a stand that gives light to all in the house around us. He wants his church to be a light. A light that illuminates things around us and points everyone who meets us, who sees us, to Jesus. I just want to ask us this morning, like, honestly, how do we think we're doing with that? A 2022 report, which was sponsored by a number of massive Christian organizations, it asked people in this country who were non-Christians, it said, what are the top things you think of when you hear church? What are the top traits that apply to the church? Can anyone have a guess at what some of them might be? What do you think was the number one? Boring. That wasn't on it. They didn't check that. It might have been higher. And old buildings. What was that, sorry? Scandals. It was actually hypocritical. 26% of people who were asked when they said, what do you think the church is like, said hypocritical. Andy, can we get the slide up? This is the entire picture of the responses. There we go. So we do have some good news. 20% of people thought we were caring. 22% thought we were friendly. But 26% said we were hypocritical. And 26% said we were narrow-minded. Are we being light that points people to Jesus if the first thing that comes to mind of 26% of people is that we're inconsistent? That we say one thing and do another. I think it's easy for me to stand up here and say, well, you know, that's not really about us. I could blame it on bigger churches. I could blame it on big church institutions. I could blame it on the media and what they write about churches. But ultimately, I really do believe that as Christians, we kind of only have ourselves to blame. Because when you shine a light, you can't shine it on something else without also illuminating yourself. And we stand here and we say we are people who represent the goodness of God, the righteousness of God, the holiness of God. And if we say that about ourselves and we try to, as we're told in this passage, shine a light, exposing the dark things in this world, we need to live in a way that acknowledges that people are going to be looking right back at ourselves. If we want to be people that shine a light into the lives of others, we need to recognize that they are going to look right back and they are going to look at us in the eye and they're going to say, what is your life like? That's what Paul is talking about in this passage. Paul tells us in this passage, and we've covered it in the last 2 weeks, it's been quite hard at times. I've been really challenged by it because he gives the believers in Ephesus this whole list of things that they need to not do. And I think ultimately it comes to this. This is his crowning metaphor that explains everything else he's told them. They need to turn away from debauchery, from brawling, from unwholesome talk. Because there is no way you can be a light in someone else's life if your own is full of darkness. I think that's really hard. Because the light of Jesus, it's not harsh. It isn't condemning, as we heard earlier. But we hear here, it is exposing. The light of Jesus can mean that we have to go to places where we confront things about ourselves that we'd really rather not think about. Living in the light of Jesus means acknowledging parts of ourselves where maybe we've allowed a little bit more darkness to seep in than we would have liked. We need to acknowledge that it's really easy, even for people who are Christians and people who've been Christians for a long time and people who genuinely love God. You know, this isn't about condemning, this isn't about grouping into bad and good, but it's really easy for people, even who love God, who want to serve God, who want to follow God, to still allow pockets of darkness to seep into what we say, what we do, and what we think. When I was a student in my first year at university, I went out clubbing with my flatmates, and we got back at about 3 a.m., and we were all really, really hungry. But it was a Wednesday, and like 3 a.m. on a Wednesday is not peak time to get good food. And none of us really wanted to cook. So we ended up ordering food from this really dodgy peri-peri chicken shop. And I ordered a chicken burger. And the burger arrived, and it did not look good. I opened the box and it almost felt like it should have had a biohazard label on it. Like there was a significant salmonella risk. However, I was a first year student and I'd spent money on it. So I was gonna eat this burger. Additionally, I was really, really hungry. And so even though I knew it was probably a very risky and bad idea to eat this burger, I did decide I'm going to eat it. Issue is, I needed to get past how horrible it looked. So honestly, Karis asked me when I ran through this yesterday, she said, did you really do that? I said, well, I wouldn't talk about it in front of everyone if I didn't. That would be lying, which sort of defeats the point of the whole light-darkness thing. I went into my room with my burger, and I turned the light out, and I ate my burger in the dark, because then I did not have to look at it. Now, fortunately, I did avoid being quite ill, and it did taste better than it looked, which was not saying much, because it looked awful. But I think it's so easy for us to kind of live life in that kind of way. Maybe we don't turn the lights all the way off, but we can live life with the light on a dimmer switch. You know, when there's something we want to do or we feel like we need to do that doesn't quite sit with the reality of who Jesus is and what we know we're called to do, to serve him, to love him, we can just kind of turn the light down a little bit to make it easier for ourselves to excuse what we want to do or to stomach what we're about to do or to justify what we want to do. And we can do this all the time. For example, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29, which we've read in previous weeks, it says this. It says, "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen." Who here thinks that every word that comes out of their mouth fits that definition? It doesn't apply to me. Right? I can guarantee you not every word that comes out of my mouth fits that definition that I'm given. Sometimes I'll dim the light on the unwholesome talk bit so that I can justify that what I want to say, it's not really unwholesome, it's maybe a little bit wholesome-ish. Like, I could just about get away with it in my mind. Sometimes I'll dim the light on the bit about what other people need to hear because I think they need to hear it. And so I'll insert that little, just blur it enough that I can insert that little what I think they need to hear rather than what they actually objectively need to hear. Or I can dim the light on the for the benefit of those who listen part just enough that I can convince myself that what I'm going to say really is going to benefit them when we both know it's not. But we're told here by Paul in verse 11, not just to work hard to decrease the amount of darkness in our lives, but to have nothing to do with any deed that is associated with darkness. He reinforces this in one of his other letters to the church in Philippi, where in chapter 2, verse 15, he calls on them to be like this. He says, "Be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, so that among them you can shine as lights in the world." In that passage, we're told to be blameless, to be innocent, and to be without blemish, which are three words that all mean the same thing. So either Paul really needed to hit a word limit and was doing that classic thing that students always do, or, and I think this is the reality, he really wanted us to get that. If we want to be people who shine as lights in this world, that is the standard of Jesus. We need to be people who live with the light of God turned all the way on, all the time. And that's like I say, that's hard. I don't know about you, but I really struggle to live a life that's even close to blameless. And none of us, I think, in this life will ever reach that point. Because we are people who were born in darkness, who on our own don't see Jesus very well. And that's why it is such a relief that there is no condemnation in Jesus, but instead, when we've allowed darkness to grow in our life, we can take it to him and say, "Lord, I recognize this is wrong. Please forgive me." And you know what? We do receive that forgiveness. That's a guarantee. But to get to that place, we first need to allow enough light into our lives that we can recognize where the darkness is still persisting. And Paul, in these passages in verses 15 to 20, identifies just a couple of simple ways that we can do that. Firstly, he calls upon us to be wise. Wisdom in the Bible is not just about being the smartest person in the room. It's not about knowing things. It's not about being able to win every Bible quiz. Wisdom is about being able to know and understand the heart of God and then make decisions based upon that. Wisdom is about knowing the heart of God, knowing what God wants, knowing what God would like us to do in a situation, and then being able to actually do it, to choose to do it. And again, that can be quite hard to do. But fortunately, we're told in the Bible that wisdom is something that God would love to give us all as a gift. That we can ask for wisdom, receive wisdom, and then the more we use it, the better we'll get at it. God is the source of wisdom, and he is inviting all of us to go to him and receive some. Ultimately, Jesus himself is the wisdom of God. Because Jesus, when he was born, he was completely a man, but he was also completely God. And every moment of his life, he perfectly understood and knew what the heart of God was. And every decision he made was in line with that heart. You know, think about it. We read, for example, in the Garden of Gethsemane that Jesus is really torn up. He's praying to the Father and he's saying, you know, is there any way I can be spared this death on the cross for those people? If there's any way that this can be lifted from me, let it pass me by. I really do feel he could have turned away at that point if he wanted to. And yet he knew the heart of God. He knew that for all of us, he needed to go to that cross. And so he chose to do it. That's the reality of Christ-like wisdom. It's being willing to say, I'm going to make the right decision, even if it's not the most convenient decision. And if you think about the cross, that's a pretty inconvenient place to end up. So the closer we draw to Jesus, the wiser we get. The more your life and my life resembles the life of Jesus, the wiser we will be, and the more we will live in the light. In the middle of this, and I just want to touch on it briefly, there's a verse that kind of stands out, and it can feel a bit incongruous, which is verse 18. Which says, do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit. And it can feel a bit random because we've got this passage where it's talking metaphorically about light and wisdom, and then all of a sudden there's this very specific thing we're being told not to do. Is it because that is particularly bad? I would argue, well, I know. No, there is no wrong thing that is any more wrong or less wrong in the eyes of God. It's all wrong. But I think the point of this is that with the benefit of modern medical science, we know that one of the first things alcohol does to us is affect the decision-making part of our brain. Alcohol, just a couple of pints, will already start to affect the judgment and the decision-making part of our brain. That's why we lose our inhibitions. It can feel quite nice sometimes, but what this passage is saying is what you're going to put into yourself something that's going to help you make good decisions or bad decisions? Are you going to put things into yourself like alcohol that could compromise your judgment making? Or are you going to desire the Holy Spirit, which is always going to shine light into your life? That's the contrast here. Are we going to pursue wisdom? Are we going to pursue Jesus? And are we going to intentionally put things into ourselves, into our life, through what we read, what we watch, what we do, that will help us to make decisions that are more like Jesus's? Or are we going to put things into our life? Are we going to listen to voices that are unhelpful? Are we going to consume things? And there's so much that we can consume now today that actually compromises our ability to make good decisions that look like Jesus's decisions. So that's the first thing we can do. Choose Jesus. Choose Jesus. And ultimately, choosing Jesus is something that none of us can make someone else do. Like, I can't make you make wise decisions, Martin, and as I'm sure you've been frustrated about in the few years we've been working together, you can't make me make wise decisions either. You can give advice, you can try and share what you know, but ultimately it's up to each of us as an individual to know what decision we make. I can't give you wisdom, only God can. And so that's a choice that all of us need to make for ourselves. But fortunately, verse 19 moves on to something that every single one of us can do for each other. Because Paul calls upon the church in Ephesus, and indeed all churches, to be people who greet one another with psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit. I don't think he's saying that to be a follower of Jesus or to belong to the church, your life suddenly has to turn into Les Miserables, where even the most like mundane interaction has to take place in the form of a four-minute song, and there's loads too much vibrato. Because like Russell Crowe got enough stick for singing in that movie. If I had to sing all the time, you would not like what you heard, right? Like, that's not what Paul is saying, but what he's encouraging us to do is make sure that every interaction, every time we greet one another, what we say is uplifting. What we say is encouraging. I'm sad to say that I've had many relationships in my life where what we've said to each other has been anything but uplifting and encouraging. When I was at school, there was these WWJD wristbands that were really, really popular. And I never wore one because I thought they were quite lame. The bands, like they just didn't look good where I was, but I was in the stick, so maybe we didn't get the cool ones. But these bands, WWJD, it just meant, what would Jesus do? And the idea was that before you did something, you'd just stop and think, would Jesus do what I'm about to do? Basically, these wristbands were a very helpful way of saying in four words what I've just spent 10 minutes telling you about wisdom, right? But today, I want to introduce you to my definitely going to catch on sequel to WWJD, which is specifically designed for us when we talk, and I'm sure that next week you will all come wearing branded t-shirts. I want to introduce you to WAPSI. Yeah, WAPSI. WAPSI. And I spent a long time trying to make it WASPI, but there was just no way I could do it. But WAPSI, would a psalm say it? Would a psalm say it? You see, psalms are really useful things. In the book of Psalms in the Bible, you've got a full range of emotion expressed. You've got anger, you've got pain, you've got sadness, you've got joy, you've got happiness, and so on and so on and so on. This isn't about limiting our emotional expression to become like robots. What WAPSI is about is capturing the heart of the Psalms, because, you know, every single psalm draws the person who wrote it, any person who says it, and I would argue any person who hears it, closer to God. The Psalms express pain, they express sadness, they express joy, but they always do it in a way that honors God, glorifies Him, and helps anyone who hears it to understand that. How much gossip is in the Psalms? Zero. How much slander is in the Psalms? There's some criticism of people in the Psalms, but it's always constructive. It's always desiring what is best for them. It's always desiring that God would bring them into Himself. But there's nothing fruitless in the Psalms. There's nothing that would lead someone further away from God. The challenge I want to pose to us is, as we go into these coming weeks, will we stop and think about the words we say to see if a psalmist would say it? Whoopsie. I got to keep saying it because I expect the t-shirts. I can't tell you how many times reading the Psalms has got me through a really tough patch in my life. You know, I at the moment I've had periods where I've felt quite down, I've felt quite angry with God at times, and the Psalms are so helpful because they've taught me that that is allowed and that that is possible in a way that glorifies God. We heard a couple of weeks ago from Sally that anger in itself is not a bad emotion, it's what it causes us to do that can lead us into trouble. Well, if I make sure that my words imitate the way that the psalmists express their anger, then I'm never gonna go astray. Each of us as a human being says thousands and thousands and thousands of words every day. Words are one of the best opportunities we have to shine the light of Jesus to one another and to the world around us. But they're also one of the most vulnerable places for many of us as people. They're one of the places where we can most frequently dim the light down a bit. That's why the Bible says so many times in so many different places that if we want to follow Jesus, one of the most important things we can do is take control of our words. Yes, whoopsie is a bit of a joke that I wrote for comic effect. But the principle to ask ourselves before we say anything, does this belong in the light? Or have I dimmed down the brightness of Jesus with what I'm about to say? So that's the challenge. Are we ready to live life with our hands firmly away from the dimmer switch? Do we desire to help one another to live life completely in the light? Because that's how we change the graph. That's how we change the graph. If we want to shine a light in other people's lives, we have to start by allowing Jesus to shine the light completely in our own. And there's an encouragement from that survey as well. Andy, can we put up the second slide, please? And it confuses me because although what people said about the church was mostly negative, this is how non-Christians described the Christians that they knew, the people. All of a sudden, we've gone from 20% caring and friendly to 50% and 60%. Which, by the way, is still too low. But look at that change. Each of us on our own has an opportunity to really be a light. And the church in the Bible is just where all of those people come together into community. So So I'm really at a loss for how, if you've got people who are trying to be a light like that, when we come together, how is the picture darker? I've never been in a room where turning more and more lights on has made it gloomier. Have you? If you go into a room and you switch on lights and there's 50 of them, it is going to be brighter than if there's just one. I just want us to ask ourselves in the time of reflection, how can we make sure that when we come together as the King's Church, we're making each other brighter and not dimmer? Are we allowing things to seep into our relationships with each other, our home groups, our coffee times, that actually is dimming the light of the person we're speaking to? Because ultimately, Jesus is the light of the world. He wants us to go to him and experience everything he has for us, so that we can live fully and truly in the light of God. Can we pray?